You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. Before we dive in, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Wise Fish. With over 30 years in the seafood industry, they're powering aquaculture, fisheries, processors, and seafood sales with one integrated platform that makes managing complex operations simpler. Check them out at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. Welcome back from the Netherlands, Amanda. Tell us all about your trip to the Global Shrimp Forum.
Yes, it was a quick trip due to the first week of school, but still a great one. So I flew in for the first day of the Global Shrimp Forum on Tuesday and was able to catch the Wild Caught Shrimp Side event, which was sponsored by the Marine Stewardship Council and the Worldwide Fishing Company. And you and I talk about this often, but it's truly insane how much there is to learn about the seafood industry. So this trip, 8 years into my career in seafood journalism, I learned that they're harvesting shrimp in Utah. Did you know that, Lauren?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's so cool. So I was not familiar with brine shrimp or Artemia. It's not something I've reported on in the past, but it was really interesting to hear from Timothy Hawks, the chairman of the board at Great Salt Lake Brine Shrimp Cooperative, who is one of the panelists at the event. I want to actually share some of my knowledge, my newfound knowledge with you.
Oh, please.
Great Salt Lake Artemia, or GSLA, it's a collection of member companies working together to harvest and distribute Great Salt Lake Artemia. But brine shrimp is essential in farm seafood, and Great Salt Lake Artemia provides nearly half of the global supply of brine shrimp cysts, or eggs, harvested each year. It's exported to 55 countries around the world, and 10 million tons of marine shrimp species rely on it. So Utah is full of surprises. I've never been. Have you, Lauren?
No, but this sounds like we need to make a trip.
Exactly. But now on to the reason why I flew to the Netherlands, the Global Shrimp Council. So I had the honor of being the co-chair for the Global Shrimp Council update and outreach meeting that took place Tuesday afternoon. It was sponsored by the Global Shrimp Forum Foundation and gave attendees, both the current and prospective members of the Global Shrimp Council, an update on the Global Shrimp Happy Protein Marketing Campaign. And Lauren, it is fire.
I feel like you sound like my elementary school kids talking about like the latest lingo when you say that.
You gotta be hip, you gotta be cool. But I mean, it was a lot about social media. So yes, it's you gotta be hip at the times, Lauren. Miguel Barcanas, the strategy and marketing consultant for the Global Shrimp Forum, debuted the promo video for the campaign at the event. And I think it's got the potential to start a real shrimp movement. It was just a fantastic video. It was just lively. It was exciting. I'm going to see if it's online, if I can link back to it. The video they have of shrimp cooking and being thrown onto the grill, and it had like families in it, and everyone, it just, they're trying to push that eat shrimp. It's nutritious, and it just overall just makes you feel happy. You know, it's a just.
Yeah. Nobody sad is eating shrimp.
No, but it's true. Like, I mean, I'm a pescatarian, so I don't eat other things, but I've never had shrimp and then afterwards sat down and been like, oh, like I feel disgusting.
No.
You know, and I do. I think of shrimp and I do smile. It built a lot of excitement, and you got to hear from companies and people with the companies that have been with the Global Shrimp Council since it started, and hear why they're so passionate about it and why they want people to join. And it's from its companies throughout the supply chain. Anybody could be a part of it. Anybody who has their hands in the shrimp supply chain should join the Global Shrimp Council and should help promote shrimp consumption. It's shrimp, you know? And these guys, they're the guys behind the avocados from Mexico. So they obviously know what they're doing.
And that's always in my head, especially at 3 a.m. when I'm trying to sleep. And my kids love saying it too. So
right. And you're never just like
hands over there.
You're never just like, you never just say avocados from Mexico. You're like,
no,
avocados from Mexico.
From Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're actually going to have a Catch the Current bonus episode.
Oh.
So yes. So we're going to have, we had a whole gang out in the Netherlands because I wasn't the only one that got to co-chair an event. Gary was also up on stage as a panelist. I think he'll be traveling, so I'm not sure if we'll have him on, but we'll have the rest of the team who was reporting from the event who could share just the highlights and all the big takeaways. And of course we have the blog up too. So if you haven't checked that out, we'll link back to that. But it was my first time at the Global Shrimp Forum, and I only got just a taste, and Lauren, I didn't even talk about the food I ate there. Oh
Oh
my
my gosh,
gosh.
yes, you, yes, please tell us.
The best part about, of course, all these events is the food. And they had, the Global Shrimp Forum had a walking dinner on Tuesday night. So they had like different stations set up. So you just got to like go walk around and like take a little
Oh, like a little
to,
cocktail
yeah,
party.
and like take a plate to go, grab a drink, and they had little tables set up. And so you just get up and kept going to try different things. I tried Madagascar shrimp for the first
Are
time.
those the huge, like banana-sized ones?
Mine wasn't nearly, well, it was taken apart, so it could have been. It was big. It was pretty big. It was delicious. But it was a bunch of different suppliers had sent in shrimp for these dishes, and it was curated specifically for the event. And as a bonus, they too, in the swag bags, they had postcards with illustrations of each of the dishes and the sponsoring company.
Very
So it
cool.
was creative and fun and delicious. So I'm hoping to be able to go back one day.
Me too. We gotta kick Gary out of there. I'm gonna start covering the shrimp market.
Speaking of the markets, Lauren, why don't you break
Yes.
down what's going on in some
Market
of your
time.
markets this week?
All right. So this week in the U.S. ground fish market, things are tightening up again, another notch. Atlantic cod is still leading the charge, but Pacific is following closely behind. And that's pushing buyers to focus more on making sure they've got supply covered rather than worrying about cost. Haddock also moved higher as raw materials stay tight. And a lot of sellers are still keeping customers on allocation, which tells you just how snug supply is. Pacific cod is still acting as the fallback for price-sensitive programs that don't want to pay the Atlantic premiums, but it's not exactly cheap either there. Haddock really stood out. We saw notable premiums out of both China and Iceland. Both origins are dealing with limited raw material and strong program demand, which is keeping the market firm. And then policy is also playing a role. So the US Trade Representative extended Section 301 tariff relief until November 29th, which is key for twice frozen products like haddock and yellowfin sole, for example. That gives buyers some breathing room in the short term, but there's still a lot of uncertainty heading into the end of the year. So overall, cod and haddock remain very supported. Atlantic is expensive, but buyers are still pulling it in. Pacific is acting as more of a pressure valve, and haddock is staying strong on tight supply. So, unless something shifts in tariffs or quotas, the trend into Q4 looks steady to firm pricing across the board.
Lauren, we are lucky to work with some of the best of the best. So let's invite a few of our Undercurrent friends on to chat about some of the big news to break this week. Joining us now to talk about the lackluster 2025 lobster harvest in the US state of Maine is reporter Barb Dean Simmons.
Well, when it comes to Maine, the lobster season this year is not doing so well. Landings again are down by about 20% compared to 2024, which was the worst season in 16 years. So here's your flashback. In 2024, Maine lobstermen caught about 86 million pounds worth about $528 million at the docks last year, and that was well below the 97 million pounds landed in 2023. And sources tell us that the landings are down by 20%. So if you do that math, we're looking at about 70 million pounds for this season. Of course, final data from the 2025 season won't be available till early 2026. The bright spot is there's a lot of small lobsters in the mix. One source told us that traps are coming up full of small lobsters. Now, they're too small, of course, to bring ashore this year. They're going back in the water. But hopefully, with a bit more growing, they'll be at market size in about 3 years. So hopefully that will turn out well in terms of supply over the next few seasons to come.
And now another issue for the lobster industry are underwater pests. Is that right?
So yeah, this season, and I think it's typical for some seasons, but sea fleas, that's those small shrimp-like scavengers, and they love dead things. So they like dead fish, dead meat, and they're really attracted to the herring and menhaden filled bait bags that are used in lobster traps. And one source told us they're going right through our bait before the traps can actually catch a good sized lobster. Sometimes the bait, there's nothing left in the bag except for bones once those sea fleas get at that bait. The other nuisance that's come back this summer is sea squirts, and that's those filter feeding marine invertebrates that are also known as tunicates, and they just attach themselves to the lobster traps and in colonies, and they get really heavy with water. So when lobstermen are trying to haul their lobster traps that have been inundated by the sea squirts, it's really heavy. That makes the day's work a whole lot harder. And apparently sea squirts have been more prolific because of warming waters since 2000. They're seeing more of them. So that's two things that are really making this season more challenging than they really want them to be for the lobster fishermen.
You know, it's really crazy when you think about how lobster gets to your plate, what some of these struggles are that these fishermen are dealing with. So that's really interesting. You got low landings, and so that's equaling high dock prices. So what does that mean for consumers? What can you tell us there?
Yeah, well, yeah, when something is in short supply, the theory is that people want more of it. And certainly the price of that limited item usually goes up. And that's been the case for dock prices. Fish harvesters are getting a pretty good deal on their catches this year. I think it's even a little bit higher than last year. And I've got those details in the story. But the shortage of live lobsters for meat and tails means also high prices at wholesale for that meat. And that means, you know, the ticket price at the restaurant and at the food truck is a little bit higher. And that's leaving consumers hemming and hawing over whether or not they can afford to buy that lobster roll. So Brett Taylor, Taylor Lobster in Kittery, Maine, he told me that, like, demand is not gangbusters, but it's not terrible either. It's just okay. And he says that he thinks consumers are being very cautious about their dollars. Now, the big question is whether consumers will continue to gobble up those lobster rolls after the Labor Day weekend, you know, when the summer fun subsides. And Paul DeMare over at Boston Sword and Tuna told me that he thinks that people will, after Labor Day, they're going to hunker down, try to save some money. And he says he thinks that will cause prices to come down. And his quote was, "I'm not an economist, but that's just the way I feel, given the current economy."
So it does seem like that. It doesn't, yeah. Like, right. You get that feeling. I get that feeling too.
Yeah. We all have a limited, you know, we all have a budget, household budget, and we all like to have the nice stuff every now and then, but I guess there comes a time when you have to, you know, save money for the next thing that you're going to really need.
And Labor Day does seem like, I'm like, okay, lobster rolls are done, unless someone introduces pumpkin spice lobster rolls. So if anyone's thinking of ideas on how to keep the lobster roll thing going, pumpkin spice, I will take royalty checks. Thank you very much.
Maybe there's a sea squirt latte in there somewhere. Who knows?
Oh gosh, Barb, that does not sound delicious at all. Aquaculture is evolving fast, and managing fish farming alongside processing, sales, and logistics means handling complex data daily. WiseFish offers an integrated platform built specifically for aquaculture and seafood businesses. It collects data from farms, linking biological and financial insights so you can track costs and yields clearly. The system captures, for example, feed and medication usage, biomass increase, mortality, labor, and equipment costs to give a full picture of profitability. It also supports planning across harvest, sales, and deliveries, helping you make smarter decisions with accurate, up-to-date information. By replacing spreadsheets and siloed systems, WiseFish reduces manual work and errors, freeing time to focus on growth. Whether scaling or optimizing workflows, WiseFish helps improve efficiency and control costs without disrupting your existing systems. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
Thanks, Barb. Now joining us on the pod is Undercurrent Editorial Director Cliff White, who reported last week on how the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, also known as NOAA, took a big step towards banning seafood imported from 46 nations, creating a 2026 deadline for countries to adhere to the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act, aka MMPA. Can you go a little bit into the specifics of what items might be impacted?
Yep, swimming crab for sure, tuna, shrimp, wild-caught shrimp, wild-catch fisheries in general. Anyone who's dealing with wild products should look at this list. So NOAA put out a list on Thursday of around 240 fisheries that are now banned from exporting products to the U.S. They're from 46 countries, 12 of which all products are banned, including Venezuela and Russia, and 34 of which have some fisheries banned, at least one fishery. Some of these fisheries are really obscure, probably don't send any exports to the U.S., but there are some that send tens, potentially even hundreds of millions of dollars of products to the U.S. The one I spent the most time looking at the species I spent the most time looking at this week was swimming crab. And this, I think, is going to be the number one species impacted. Swimming crab fisheries in Indonesia, Vietnam, Sri Lanka, and India are all affected by this, not to mention Venezuela, which is another huge exporter of blue swimming crab. And so Venezuela stuff is entirely banned. Not a single piece of seafood from Venezuela can enter the US legally starting January 1st. So that's huge. All this is
Wow.
effective January 1st. And not all fisheries from those big exporting nations that I mentioned from Asia are affected, but many significant fisheries are.
So do you think
And
we're going to see a
especially,
push now with
I've
like an
spoken now
increase
with
in
five
Venezuelan
different
swimming
seafood
crab
executives,
coming in before
and
the end of the
everyone's
year?
trying to figure it
I
out.
wouldn't be
And
surprised.
it's going to,
Yeah,
there's
vary
only
by
a few
species and
importers
vary
that
by
buy
importing
Venezuelan
country
Venezuelan
or
swimming
country that
crab
sends
exports to the US, but it could be anywhere from no impact at all, depending on the fishery, to devastating, crushing. I think one executive called it a death punch to the US swimming crab import
Ouch.
sector. So it could be really bad. But I have questions into NOAA to try and figure out the impact of this, and they haven't gotten back to me yet. They say they will by the end of the week. I have questions into NFI. They're looking into it. They had an emergency meeting yesterday to discuss this. So it's complicated, and there's not a lot of answers out there right now. It sounds like, from what I'm hearing from the industry, that the earliest they'll be able to appeal is after this goes into effect January 1st. And knowing government being government, it'll take at least a couple of months to get any answers back, whether the appeal can be successful. This all stems back to NOAA being forced by several lawsuits filed by environmental NGOs challenging their enforcement of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. All these environmental NGOs challenged NOAA's basically equivalency, the regulatory equivalency. So they weren't, in effect, treating foreign fisheries with the same stringency that they were treating domestic fisheries. So there was what the Southern Shrimp Alliance, which is the U.S. domestic wild-caught shrimp industry, has called an unfair disadvantage put on U.S. fisheries and fishermen who were facing much more stringent regulations. So NOAA was forced by a court settlement made earlier this year to publish this list of fisheries, and they studied each fishery that they could in depth, over 2,500 fisheries worldwide, and determined for each one whether they met Marine Mammal Protection Act levels of regulation or not. The vast majority, they said, did. And that's also being still criticized by environmental NGOs. But 240 failed, did not pass this test that NOAA did. And those are the ones that I'm looking at to see how that's going to impact US imports starting in 2026.
You know, that's really interesting too, because you said Russia was also on there. And, you know, with Trump opening up, you know, conversations again with Putin, like there was some speculation that they might reopen trade. And so now that kind of, at least for seafood, dampers that, you know, if that was ever an option, I guess, right?
Yeah, totally. It's another huge angle of this. So Russia did not respond to NOAA's request for information. So it was put on a list of total ban. It's totally banned starting January 1st, 2026, from exporting any products to the US. There's another separate ban that President Biden put on in place in 2023. So that's still in place. President Trump hasn't rescinded that, but he has floated in vague terms, as Trump does, the possibility of easing sanctions on Russia in exchange for some kind of ceasefire in Ukraine. That hasn't happened yet, but now it can happen because there's this other ban in place. So there's this redundancy now on Russian products, and Russia was a top 10 exporter to the US before this ban was put in place. Now, zero products are. It came in last year, and zero products can come in under this new regulation, even if Trump wants them to. He doesn't have the authority to change this. It's going to be NOAA that's going to have to decide it.
And again, it's for the foreseeable future.
It's indefinitely starting January 1st. I think, from what I'm hearing from the industry, that you can, or the industry can, file for a new consideration or review of each individual fishery. It'll be done on a fishery by fishery basis. I think the home country needs to be involved in that as well, wherever that fishery is located. These reviews involve close contact between governments and regulators to try and find out what's actually being regulated, whether these are paper regulations or whether they actually have teeth on in these local fisheries. And yeah, it looks like NOAA did a really exhaustive job looking at these fisheries, but the review would have to find that something has changed in between when they did the initial study and now, basically. So any of these fisheries that failed need to do something to fix what's going on, what caused them to fail, in order to get a passing grade and to begin exporting again, or being allowed to, getting permission to export to the US.
And all of that happened in less than 3 months.
The executives I spoke to in the swimming crab industry think that the industry will be more or less shut down for at least 8 months. So because the supply chain's so long, they're going to stop shipping November 1st because they don't want to get caught with any product coming in after January 1st. They're going to shut down. Now, they haven't finalized this decision. They're still waiting for confirmation from NOAA. This is what's going to happen. But they're going to shut down a lot of their imports, or imports from Indonesia, which is the primary exporter of swimming crab, but also India, Vietnam. China has 55% tariffs. India, which is another producer, has 50% tariffs. So even though those don't face bans, they're still bloody expensive with these huge tariffs. Not to mention all these other Southeast Asian countries have 20% tariffs. It's too expensive for them to produce. So there's going to still be going to be some product coming into the US. They're estimating maybe half of all product will be, or the total will be halved by 2026, and that the earliest they'll be able to get a new decision is 4 or 5 months into the new year. Then you still have to restart your factories, restart all your sourcing. That's another 2, 3, 6 months. So it's going to be a very difficult 2026 for swimming crab importers next year.
Well,
That
that was.
all collides at the end of the year when we see a major push for exports into the US, right on the tails of Lent in the beginning of the year. So not an optimal time at all.
And I just want to say is that if you do not have a subscription to Undercurrent, what are you waiting for? Because this is the type of information that we've got that you need. So check out Cliff's full story in the show notes.
Thanks, guys.
Before we go, just an update on what's going on with the radioactive or so-called radioactive shrimp. An interesting development. Gunster, a major US law firm with 340 attorneys, is pushing the US Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, to edit its import alert that blocks all these shrimp from Indonesia's Bahari Makmur Sajati, or BMS. So Gunster was hired by two US companies that import Indonesian shrimp that are very concerned, they say, about the targeting of BMS. And they've asked Peter Quinter, a Boca Raton, Florida-based attorney and shareholder at Gunster and the chair of the firm's US Customs and International Trade Law Group to look into this. So what he's doing is because FDA issued Import Alert 9951, which states that BMS's products are contaminated with radionuclides such as CS137, what Quinter wants to do is he wants the FDA to remove the general import alert against BMS and instead edit it to specify that only the shrimp from one problem facility is banned. So we've got the full details on that story. Like I said, a really interesting development. They made the request to the FDA. We'll have to see if the FDA is willing to grant it. So check that out.
Well, that does it for us this week. Be sure to check out the bonus episode of Catch the Current coming out Monday for all the scoop from the Global Shrimp Forum.
From Row to Plate, Wise Fish supports seafood businesses across aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies around the world like Tassel, Niels Faer, and others, Wise Fish helps control costs, improve margins, and enable smarter financial decisions, replacing spreadsheets and siloed systems. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.